Hello, everyone, and welcome to Homicide Hot Dish Second Helping. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Deanna.
Today we are discussing the murder of Timothy O'Brien, the 8-year-old boy that was poisoned by his own father who laced his Halloween candy with cyanide.
Alright, so first thing, obviously this case took place on Halloween night of 1974. Now, Ronald O'Brien, the father, was born on October 19th of 1944, so this murder took place just 12 days after his 30th birthday. So we're guessing that they all celebrated together as a family, you know, his wife and his two kids, but having that celebration and knowing that in less than 2 weeks he was going to kill his children, that's just so heartbreaking. Like, sick at the same time. I feel like there's similarities here with Chris Watts, sort of that the man wants a different life without his children or the wife. In this case, obviously, it's he didn't want his children and wanted the money instead, and Chris Watts wanted another woman, but still, they wanted that different life.
Right. And like you said, too, I don't know how he could go through with this. I mean, I'm sure he was like eating birthday cake with his kids on his birthday. And then what? He was just looking at them like they're dollar signs? Like, oh, perfect. In a few weeks, I'm going to get some payout money when you kids are gone. That's just so demented.
You know, you can't put a price on your children. I don't know how the thought can even come across parents' minds.
Right, there's no way I could ever imagine doing something to my children, no matter how much money I would get or how much debt I was in. There's absolutely no freaking way. So one thing I think puts a lot of guilt on Ronald is that he talked to so many people about cyanide. So, I mean, once word got out that cyanide was used to kill Timothy, don't you think that would raise a red flag for those people that Ronald had talked to? And I mean, it's a good thing that he talked to so many people about it, though, because that just proved his guilt even more.
I mean, thank goodness, because back in that day, they didn't have what's called Google. Right. So, you know, he had to ask questions somehow on, you know, cyanide and whatnot. But, man, that was a lot of people he talked to.
Yes, and he talked to 12 people about cyanide. Like, it wasn't just one person. It was 12 people. So, I mean, obviously, that's going to make him look super suspicious when his son just happens to die from the exact same poison that he's been talking to people about.
Right, like, at least switch up your talk of poison.
Right, switch it up.
Yeah, I mean, talking about cyanide with everybody, he for sure made plenty of mistakes, that being one of them. And, I mean, I would immediately call police and tell them what I knew if he was talking to me about cyanide and asking, you know, what's more lethal, this or that and whatnot. But then, like, talking to his sister-in-law at his son's funeral that he used the money to take a long vacation. I mean, I understand taking some time off to grieve your loved one and whatnot, but not like a vacation, like, give me some sun and margaritas.
Exactly. And he said that literally at his son's funeral. Like, give it some time, dude. Your son hasn't even been gone for a week yet, and you're already talking about what you're going to do with that insurance money? What the hell? And that makes me wonder if his wife knew about any of this, because he had called the insurers the very next day, I mean, not even 24 hours after his son died, and was asking them about getting that money. So, I don't know. Do you think his wife knew what was going on?
I really don't think she did, especially since, you know, we talked about how he wanted the insurance policies to, you know, not have to be signed by his wife and, you know, persisted that they stay at the office and him not bring them home. So I really don't think she did have a clue.
Right. I actually don't think she did either. So that is one thing I want to talk about is his wife. So I usually don't believe it when a wife says, I had no idea what my husband was doing. Whether he, you know, like, was raping women or murdering random people or whatever he was doing. I feel like, as a wife, you know when something's up, if you pay attention to your husband at all. So,
yes, but I will play devil's advocate here because,
okay,
Jeff is really good about surprising me with things. You know, so I kind of feel like, okay, if you're good at this with, you know, surprising me with, you know, dinners and trips and stuff, I feel like you could actually be a really good serial killer and hide this behind my back.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
Okay, if you ever go missing, I know who did it.
She had no clue.
But in this case, I do believe her that she had no clue what was going on. So, I mean, it can happen. I just don't feel like it happens a lot when these women say this. But in your case, Deanna, if something happens to you, I will be like, Deanna had no freaking idea what was going on.
He distracted her with a dog or something.
Yes, he got her a dog that took her attention away from the decaying bodies in the garage. Okay, so another thing I need to talk about is, why do you think he never confessed? Because, I mean, he got the death penalty, and obviously he knew he was gonna die, but still, he never confessed. So my question is, do you think he was innocent?
I don't think he was innocent. I think the evidence is a little bit on the slim side, but I think there's enough there to actually prove that it was him. And that it was, you know, premeditated. As to why he never confessed, I'm not sure if that was something where he didn't want to admit it to his wife kind of thing, or, you know, a grandparents kind of thing. I have no idea. It's kind of like at this point, especially if you know if you're getting the death penalty, you might as well confess and, you know, bring your family that closure. But I don't know. So I do think it's weird he never confessed, but
yeah, I do think that he was absolutely 100% guilty. I mean, everything was pointing to him, and it wasn't just a coincidence that his son had died from the exact same poison that he had been asking people about purchasing. And I mean, he claimed to not even remember which house the candy had came from, which I would have understood if they had been trick-or-treating all night and down multiple streets, but they only went down two streets, and I would have easily remembered that exact house that it came from. Like I mentioned in the case episode, the house had a wall that was like concealing the front door, and I'm assuming it was kind of like a partition wall where you go up the side behind the wall to get to the front door. So I think that would have been a house that would be easy to remember.
Right, yeah, and especially if it's something where, you know, you're going and grabbing the candy from the person instead of the kids grabbing the candy from that person. I'd understand if, like, the kids got pixie sticks and it was just in their bunch of their candy bags or whatever, but if it was the adult that was carrying the candy just that one time, you would think that's when it'd be memorable.
Right. It'd be different if he was like standing on the sidewalk, you know, waiting while the kids went up to the doors and walking house to house like that. But he actually went up to the house himself, with the kids, I mean. And he's the one that got the pixie sticks, not the kids.
Right.
We hope you enjoyed your second helping, and be sure to stay tuned into our Facebook page for true crime facts and to see when our second Halloween Horrors episode will be coming out.